Turn onto 2nd Avenue in West Birmingham, and you're in for a surprise. Rising among the rundown houses and railroad tracks is a handsome green grandstand wrapped neatly around a pristine baseball diamond. On a sunny afternoon, Birmingham's Rickwood Field looks straight out of some young boy's daydreams of Ty Cobb and Babe Ruth. Today it stands as a quiet reminder of the sport's legacy. But for much of the past century, it was at the center of the city's life, with people coming from all over to catch a game.
So you would have gotten off the trolley, you would have approached the front of the park. In the heyday of minor league baseball, going to the ballpark was a big, big deal.
David Brewer is the executive director of Friends of Rickwood, a group devoted to keeping the old stadium in its historic condition.
People tended to dress for going to the ballpark. Many of the old photographs of the park, it looks like everyone in the park is wearing a Sunday hat.
For nearly 50 years, Rickwood Field was the city's biggest draw. The hometown team, the Birmingham Barons, started out as an industrial league team called the Coal Barons, playing in a tiny stadium known as the Slag Pile in the city's West End. The turning point came in 1910, when the heir to a pig iron fortune decided to indulge his passion for baseball. He bought the team and built the grandest stadium south of the Ohio River.
Rick Woodward, who owned the Barons, was a very flamboyant personality.
Timothy Witt, the author of Bases Loaded with History, a chronology of the Birmingham Barons.
He bought the team because I think he secretly wanted to play with them. When the first game was played at Rickwood Field, he inserted himself into the game and he threw the first pitch. He didn't throw the first pitch out. He was in the game on the mound as a pitcher and threw a pitch, which was called a ball. Then he retired and let the Barons' regular pitcher take his place.
The mound Rick Woodward pitched from more than 90 years ago still rises from the center of the field his money built. Rickwood Field is the kind of park baseball fans fall in love with. In its heyday, the park could claim, rather mischievously, the longest home run hits in history. There are stories of balls landing on the roofs of trains passing behind the outfield wall and making it all the way to Washington or New York before ever touching the ground. Accounts of the legendary games played here still sound fresh.
For many years in Birmingham, the game that was remembered the most took place in 1931. It was in the Dixie Series. It's sort of a small world series for the South. And the Barons had won in 1931, and the Texas League champions were the Houston Buffs, and their star pitcher was Dizzy Dean. And of course, Dizzy Dean really invented trash talking. In the weeks leading up to the first game of the series, he had started taking pot shots at Birmingham. In the media, and the citizenry was enraged.
He had suggested that his Houston team would come to Birmingham and very handily beat the Birmingham Barons. That generated a furor of sorts in the Birmingham community. Close to 20,000 people came out to the ballpark in a ballpark that only seats 10,000.
They were standing in the outfield out there in roped off areas. 20,000 people waiting for the game. They got there hours before the game because they hated Dizzy Dean so much because he had insulted their team. Well, the pitcher for Birmingham was a guy named Ray Caldwell.
Ray Caldwell, who was in his mid-40s, a former major league pitcher, sort of on the downhill slide of his career. And so it was the old guy versus the very young guy.
But the game goes and it starts off and neither team scores and it goes back and forth. Nobody's getting anywhere. Dizzy Dean is facing the minimum through six or seven innings. But so is Ray Caldwell. Old Ray Caldwell is doing just as well. And it comes up to the bottom of the eighth inning. Birmingham finally scores a run. They manage to push one run across, and Birmingham gets past the ninth and wins 1-0. And for many years in Birmingham, it was considered the greatest game ever played. The defeat of Dizzy Dean was the big game for the Barons, probably in the history of the franchise.
For the first 50 years of its history, that franchise was all white. But when you're going through the roster of the greats who got their start at Rickwood Field, it pays to look at a different team list. Piper Davis, Willie Mays, Satchel Paige, all of them took the field every other Sunday when the White Barons were playing on the road, and the Birmingham Black Barons got their chance to shine.
Strike three, he's done it! A perfect game for Satchel Paige!
That's an echo of the excitement of the Negro Leagues, captured in the HBO movie Soul of the Game. Unfortunately, that's about the closest you can get to that era now. Few recordings of the league have survived. But there is one other place where those long-ago afternoons still burn brightly. In the memories of their fans.
The first game that I seen the Negro League is the Birmingham Black Barons, guessing say 45 or something like that. And I jumped the fence, you know, being a little boy, because we was running balls. And I saw them practice. It was just amazing. They didn't never drop a ball. Watching them take infield was better than watching the game. I said, that's where I'm going to play.
Donnie Harris did go on to play for the Black Barons, signing with the team in 1959 as a center fielder. He was on hand to witness the last days of the Negro Leagues. As the major league teams integrated, they drained the best talent from the Negro Leagues. And the Black Barons, which at their height drew capacity crowds all over the Southeast, disappeared into a changing world.
The kids, there's nothing that they are being taught. They are being taught this month right here. Civil rights is about the civil rights struggle, Martin Luther King, things like that. But they are just one segment of what was happening.
For Harris, integration was a bittersweet victory. He says the Black community still feels the loss of its team. But if the success of integration did end the Negro Leagues, it was the struggle to maintain segregation that brought an end to the White Barons' golden age. Of course, there were other factors strangling minor league ball all across the country: air conditioning, television, and the rise of other sports. But the end was hastened for all white minor league teams because they became a liability to integrated major league clubs. The first attempt at integration came to Rickwood Field in 1954, with an exhibition match featuring the Brooklyn Dodgers with Jackie Robinson. Again, historian Timothy Witt.
But very shortly after that, you saw a great downturn in the number of exhibition games that were played, because the integration crisis and the gathering storm over that gradually drug down interest, I think, in the Southern Association with the white fans that were sustaining it. And to some extent, there was a transference, I think, to college football.
Of course, today, the current incarnation of the Barons play fully integrated games at their new home in Hoover. Across town at Rickwood Field, the Friends of Rickwood debate the historic value of restoring the park's main symbol of segregation, the Negro bleachers, which used to sit in right field exposed to the sun. But for now, all traces of its racial history have melted away from the park. On the Wall of Fame, pictures of white and black Barons teams hang next to each other without comment. The historical tale it tells is not of social movements or grand themes, but the simpler stories of men and long afternoons and the swing of a bat against a clean, true pitch. For WBHM, I'm Megan Williams.